to Things I Wish I Knew, the podcast from Thinking Faith, a work of the Jesuits in Britain. My name is Julia, I'm in my early 30s, and I'm living in a Jesuit young adult community in London. So we all live hectic lives, and often don't get time to reflect on what's happening both to us and around us. This podcast is meant to help you to take a moment to stop and think about where you are, where you're going, and where your relationship with God fits into it all. Every week, I'll meet a new guest who tells me about something they've experienced, which changed their lives forever. And by talking about the things they wish they'd known at the time, we'll explore the idea that God is in all things. And we'll talk about the part that faith plays in navigating life's challenges. So today, I'm speaking to David. David is studying at Aberystwyth University in medieval Welsh literature. And I'm talking to him about his experience of getting sick and having cancer. So the interesting part of talking to David is not just his experience of getting cancer, but his experience of the positivity around it and how the people in his church and his family and his friends support him and really came together at that time and his optimism for the future. So, David, tell me about yourself.
Well, my name's David. I am doing a doctorate in Middle Welsh poetry. Well, I'm 25. I am Anglican, church in Wales, that is. And well, I've had cancer at my young age. I suppose that's why I'm here, to discuss my experience. I suppose that's all. I've got an active life in the church. I'm a warden and I manage the student groups and so on. Yes, I don't have much free time between doctorates and church volunteering.
How did you end up in Wales?
Well, I'm an American. I'm from New Jersey originally, and it's very expensive and tuition's very expensive in that state. So I looked at the United Kingdom. I mean, I wanted to do medieval studies no matter what, and I just had a look at where that was offered here, and tuition here, even for international students, which is, yeah, it's not very cheap, but where I am there were two Byzantinists, I don't know where he placed the stress even now, and I found their work interesting, and so I thought I'd come to Wales to study. I took Welsh classes in my undergrad, and I sat in on a bunch of literature and Welsh history classes, and I like the language. And so I got funding to do a master's, and then I got funding to do a doctorate. And so here I am, 7 years running in my final year of my doctorate.
So were you studying in Wales when you got sick?
I was just starting up my PhD. I started to feel ill. I had different symptoms, but I didn't piece them together. Because who does? You know, I was 23, and you don't expect to have, well, any form of cancer when you're 23.
What led you to go to the hospital?
Well, I couldn't really breathe. So the university is up a great big hill. You know, it's probably say half a mile almost. And it's not exactly very smooth hill either. It's quite steep. And so going up there every day, as I would to the library, I felt quite out of breath. And I thought, you know, I've been doing this every day for, you know, 4 years now. I would go home for summers, but I was thinking I'm not that out of shape, you know, and it was at the end of November. So I was already used to it for a few months. And so I thought, this is strange. But then I came back from a Wednesday church service in town, which everything's flat. And I came back to my flat and I was out of breath just from walking from church to home. And I thought, goodness, you know, there really is something wrong. I had a guest over, an old friend from undergrad. And after I saw him off, I went into the hospital on a Monday. I was there all day. They first tried to think it was stress because, you know, starting a PhD is obviously very stressful and it mainly was psychosomatic. But they just did an x-ray on me and they could see that my left lung was full of fluid. Well, not full of fluid, as I would later find out. And then they did some sort of internal scan. I don't remember if it was a PET scan or a CT scan. And they saw I had extensive tumors with whatever dye put in me. And so I knew, they knew it was lymphoma, but I didn't know what type and I didn't know how much it was. I knew it was stage 3, but it's better they didn't tell me how much there was. Because it was quite some bit.
There's a really quick diagnosis as well. How did that make you feel?
I was shocked. I was very, it was just shocking, really. And then I thought, oh, you know, this is pretty bad. And I, you know, I wept. I wept. And then they sent me home. Well, I didn't go home. I had been going to the same church for years now, but by that point, 4 years, I think. And so there was a pensioner. Her and her husband, I knew very well, and her husband had only passed the year before, but she was sort of, she looked after the students as if they were, grandchildren or friends or whatever you want to call it. So I went to her. I know her daughter as well lives just across the road. And so I stayed with her at hers for the night, and she's very religious, you know, spoke to her and her daughter, and they comforted me, and her son-in-law and her granddaughter, of course. And then I just sort of had to figure out what to do next. Yeah, the hospital was ringing me incessantly. I mean, it's quite a grave deal, isn't it? But I went in and I realized that I didn't have fluid in my lung, but rather a quick anatomy lesson. All of your organs sit inside little sacs inside your body to protect them. And so your lungs sit inside like bags for your lungs inside your body. And it's full of this liquid, which they had to syringe me in the back to drain out very carefully. And then I could at least breathe well. You know, I felt fine. I was actually feeling quite chipper, but you know, I still had to go get the chemotherapy done.
So how did you begin to process that? Or was it just the case that you went straight into treatment and didn't have time to process it?
Well, it was about 3 weeks, I think. It was the beginning of December, maybe the end of November. And then I had my first regimen of chemotherapy on Christmas Eve of 2021. It was all just sort of a rush. I mean, I had nothing but well wishes and people offering to help. I mean, it was scary. But I think when you're in that position, any improvement is a godsend, you know? And so as soon as I could breathe right, I thought, you know, I told to the woman that helped me out, you know, oh, well, you know, I feel like I could run a mile now. I think, you know, my natural instinct was just almost foolishly optimistic, you know, because obviously it was a very grave situation, but all you can do is make light of it and pray on us, really, because nothing I could do. Before I started to have any improvement, it was really scary. And even my parents came over from the States, quite the hassle for them, of course, getting last minute airline tickets at Christmas time. But they came here and going there, and I was apprehensive about starting it when I did the treatment, the chemotherapy, because it is scary. They gave me two options as well, whether to get the advanced, you know, super toxic treatment, because I had quite an advanced stage of cancer, or the lesser one. I went for the more advanced one because it would clear things out quicker. I don't know. I knew it was necessary, but I wanted to delay it until after Christmas, I think, in my initial thinking. But I just went through with it anyways.
Did it feel like a Christmas blessing or Christmas trauma to have chemotherapy on Christmas Eve?
It didn't really feel like Christmas. I mean, I was in a charity ward. I should explain that. I was 23 when I was diagnosed. And so I was young enough that I was lucky is the wrong word. I guess as far as things go, I was lucky, very lucky, or very blessed, I guess you could say, to have been in a ward supported by charity. It was in Cardiff Hospital, Teenage Cancer Trust, I think was the charity that ran it. And so it was almost like a hotel. Like there was a lounge upstairs. The rooms were very big. I had a room to myself and so on. But it just didn't feel like Christmas because of the gravity of the situation at hand. So I don't really know if I connected it so much. They brought in, you know, stockings full of goodies for everyone there, you know, even filled with such things as a bathrobe, which I've still got in my house. Even so, I guess I wasn't really in the Christmas spirit, if you can call it that. So it didn't really feel much connected to it, regardless of the calendar. I had already been in for a couple of days by Christmas Eve. So I didn't, I don't know. I didn't really connect it to it at the time. It's just sort of a coincidence, looking back on it.
You said your parents had to get last minute flights. Can't imagine how that must have been for them.
Yeah, they stayed about 2 weeks, I think, maybe a bit more. It was a bit before. And then we took buses and trains down to Cardiff. And then they came back with me to my flat. Oh, we had a taxi back, actually. Like the charity ward was so nice as to pay for taxi rides to and from going to Cardiff, because I had to go there every 3 weeks for the first round of treatment because the local hospital isn't well equipped enough for, you know, the neurotoxins, because that's what chemotherapy is. You know, they were pumping in me. But they stayed quite some time and they tried to spend as much time as they could. But, you know, they couldn't take too much leave off from their jobs. And it was very, I can only imagine, you know, I'm an only child. So it must have been twice as painful for them. I mean, of course, I lived away for so long, so they missed me anyways. And then to hear this, they met the people that looked after me from my church and some of my friends as well. So they knew I was in good hands. And I think that lesson there.
I was going to ask you about your support system, because your parents were there for 2 weeks, but the process must have gone on for longer. So who was your support system?
Yeah, so as I said, there was the widow, the pensioner, who I know very well. I see her as a sort of another grandmother now. I help her out. I do errands for her. I help her out in the garden or to pick up groceries or prescriptions or whatever. But she pretty much housed me sometimes, because sometimes it'd be too weak to do house chores. So I just say, you know, I waited too long to do laundry. Can I wash my clothes in your washer and dryer and so on? And can I spend the night here and so on? Or she'd check in, and her daughter as well, who's a deacon, or other people at my church. I mean, I was already, I had been asked to be a warden before, so I was already a familiar face around the parish. Well, I mean, I'd been going there for a few years, but there was another couple. before another American, actually, and her husband, and they looked after me very well, and their daughter as well. And then another retired couple who used to be an academic. He used to be an academic at Liverpool or something. But when I would be on my travels, to put it that way, I would have 3 days in Cardiff getting pumped full of, all sorts of noxious things. And they just make you very tired and worn out by the third day. Even if I had a full night's sleep, I would, fall asleep in the taxi on the way back. And so, they would take me in with a nice roast dinner or something and check in on me. And I just felt very cared for, and I'm ever so thankful for that. My parents would ring me, and my girlfriend, of course, I shouldn't forget her. She was on Erasmus studies in Italy, in Bologna. And so she was worried sick. I mean, she was so far away and she didn't know whether or not I, because I could very well not lie, but not tell the truth. Because if I felt worse, I wouldn't want to make her worried.
Whenever someone's sick, they don't want to make someone worried about them. So they say, yeah, I'm doing okay, but I guess your girlfriend wanted the truth.
Yes. I had a lot of support. And my parents and my grandparents would ring me even here, as often as they could, because they were even further away. And they, knew me and knew I've always been, I wouldn't complain. But even so, I don't think I had that bad of a time with it. There's lots of horrible side effects these drugs can have. I mean, I was bald, didn't have any hair. And I was extremely tired. But, you can have horrible nausea and all these other, your fingernails stop growing and get weird and all these other strange things that can happen, weird pains or whatever. And I didn't have any of it.
Going back, you must have had that great support having that church connection and people in your church as well.
Yes, I wouldn't have been able to go through it, I think, without them and without my girlfriend and without my family back home. The day-to-day stuff, they check in on me or bring me food or dinner or whatever. Yeah, I mean, I still tried to carry out what duties I could as a warden, which I think probably comforted them, because it's a horrible thing for someone at such a young age to have cancer. But they, I was greatly supported by that and my girlfriend, and I couldn't have done it without them.
Well, we now know that you got the all clear. And you said to me that you had 3 rounds of treatment. Is that right?
I had 4. Yes. I'm all clear. 2 years now. Thanks be to God. Every 6 months, I just have to get a blood test and, it's fine.
How did that moment when they told you you were all clear come around?
So I had 2 rounds of treatment, and they, before I started the third in Cardiff, they wished for me to have another scan to see how the chemotherapy was progressing, because I could have had 6 if it wasn't responding, the cancer wasn't responding well to treatment. And so I had the scan, and then they did the first day of treatment. And on the second day, they showed me the results of the scan. And they showed me the first scan as well. And they were really quite amazed, the nurses were, because I didn't have any trace of any cancer after the second round. And I should say, the way it looked, I had, before starting any treatment, between my lungs, I had a single tumor that was around 12 inches across from corner to corner. Now, I'm a very tall man. I'm 6'7", so I perhaps have a bit more space in my chest than most people. But it's still very big. And so I was thankful for them for not showing it to me when I first started, because I probably would have had, a much worse mental state going into it. I was very thankful, very grateful to God.
At the second scan, they saw it was all clear, but you still had 2 further rounds of treatment.
That's right. It's just to make sure that, because the scans, they put this radioactive sugar in your body, strange as it sounds, to see where the centers of cell division are, because they use it up when there's cell growth. And so usually it aggregates in your heart and your kidneys and your bladder, but any other dark spots would have been tumors. So they did it to make sure that there wasn't any more growth, but there still could have been tumors that for whatever reason were dormant, or there may have been very small clumps of cells that had survived, and they wanted to do, well, they would never do less than 4 rounds, but the last 2 rounds were just to weed out whatever was left. I think I got the scan in the beginning of March. And so, that was less than 2 months since I started treatment.
When you got that news, that all clear, how did that feel?
Well, I was really over the moon. I was very grateful. I thank God I called my girlfriend crying, how happy I was, and my parents as well. And then the woman who helped me most. I rung them all during the treatments, just making small talk, because being there alone was, that's a scary situation, isn't it? But to finally have had that over, knowing that it was not over, but that you were at least clear, after the treatment you would begin healing, was really quite the joy. I really can't put it into words.
What gave you the strength to keep fighting?
Faith, and then the support of the people around me. I mean, I'd always I have a little pocket prayer book, maybe only about 4 inches long, in tiny little print, from the reign of I don't know, it's like 120 years old. Whoever was at the Victoria, as I'm not British, well, most British people don't know all their kings, do they? George, I think, was it? And it could fit into the breast pocket of my jacket. And so I brought that, and I would read the office every day, and I'd read through the psaltery and so on. And prayer was no small amount of the days there, of course. And thanking God that I was made it thus far, you know, because every day was a struggle in its own way, but you couldn't do anything but sort of be thankful that you were allowed more, because, you know, I had a new lease on life.
My next question was going to be, what did you learn from the experience, or how did it change your view of life? But you kind of just answered it then.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can go into more. I'm just very thankful for each day I have, and I don't sweat the small things. I mean, my girlfriend has told me I've matured quite a bit. I mean, when you're a young man, you sort of feel like you're invincible. I think all young men are like this. You're strong in body. You don't have any health problems. You're quick in the mind. And I had that taken away from me. I was totally weakened, but totally dependent on others. And though I never considered myself a very prideful man, it's just given me a lot to be thankful for, and patience especially. It's the long, it was 12 weeks of treatment and then half a year of recovery. So a lot of patience, you know, I think I've matured a lot and become more wisened, I suppose. Giving me new, I'm thankful for every day, and I try to serve God in whatever way I can each day, even if I spend a lot of time working up in a, you know, with my nose in a book on a computer, trying to do something good every day, because I owe everything to my, you know, my creator who saved me.
Are there any challenges you face going forward?
Well, I do become a bit apprehensive, you know, every 6 months when I have to get the blood drawn. Even the act of getting, I was poked and prodded with so many needles. I had a port put in me, you know, a very long plastic tube was stuck in my arm, and it reached all the way to the joining of all the arteries before your heart. And so I never had a fear of needles, but it does sort of bring back all the experiences when I get that. But it's also not dreading the result, but I know what the waiting's like. And so it's not very pleasant. And I think that's probably the biggest, the cancer, Hodgkin lymphoma, is so slow growing that by the time that I would have, something would have shown up on the blood tests, I would have had symptoms anyway, so they tell me. So I know it's nothing, but I guess that's the hardest part. You know, it's been so long that I'm no longer afraid of, I used to be afraid of things like itches, you know, because one of the symptoms of the cancer is having excessive itching. I didn't think anything of it before I even was diagnosed. Yeah, it's probably just coming up every 6 months and what memories that bring back, because it was scary. As much as I tried to look on the best of things during it, and now, I won't deny that it wasn't certainly wasn't a fun experience. I wouldn't recommend it if you can avoid it.
What do you wish you'd known before you were diagnosed?
Just how much I'm loved, I suppose, because it really does help when so many people bend over backwards, come out to help you. You know, because you never, there's always a separation between two individuals, and, you know, you can never know what they really feel. I mean, I don't think I was insecure before, but it's very nice to feel valued and loved in such a way, because I didn't deserve to have cancer, but, you know, the treatment and the warmth and the outpouring of love and support I had wasn't merited either. And it sort of reminded me of God's grace. As an Anglican, perhaps I might have different views about the way grace works, but I'll just go with what old Augustine says. Something we can all agree on is that God chose people to be loving towards me, and so I was saved by God, and all the good acts I do are authored by him. That's Paul, at least. So I suppose just what it feels like more intimately, because when you're young, you don't need much help. And so to be on the other end makes you see things in a different way. Do you get what I mean? Or, I mean, obviously young people need help, but not in the same way, if that makes sense. Visiting the sick and helping the needy, you know, when you're young and strong, as I touched upon before, you don't really think about those things. But now it shows me. And because I was helped by a charity ward, and of course, the public health service, the NHS, I sort of feel thankful, because you never know who you run into that could have donated. You know, anyone on the street could have donated a small amount of money. You know, every little bit helps to the, I'm sure, immense costs. I mean, so anyone on the street could have helped pay for the treatment, or the you know, the support in the ward, or getting me to and from. And so I'm humbled, and I try to see the best in everybody, because even somebody who's being quite difficult may have saved me in that way, you know? So that's definitely something they've taken away from it. I hope that answers the question.
You're starting to answer my final question to you, which is, what are you grateful for?
Well, still being able to praise God on this earth and try to do his work, I suppose. And to show the love I've been shown to not only my parish, but to people generally. I mean, I try to, even in teaching, you know, I think it's helped me with teaching as a lecturer, having patience, you know, because I'm here with all this experience, and you know, somebody who's an undergrad comes in and they ask a question, which you know is quite confused to someone who's had lots of training. But it reminds me of the questions I asked, and it reminds me of how I was, you know, I felt so secure, and then it was taken away from me. So I can only be patient and charitable to others. And so I'm grateful for that. You know, I'm grateful for the changes which the disease has wrought in me, or I should say, yeah, the experience of having a disease, because I don't think the old cancer cells themselves did anything, but rather the way in which grace abounded, if I think, in my lives and the lives of those that helped me. And then even if, you know, I shouldn't think everyone, well, I know everyone who donated or everyone that helped me wasn't Christian, but that grace can work through, you know, the lives and through the wills of people who aren't Christian as well, you know, because it shows how all-powerful and all-loving God is. So, yeah, I think that's the short of it.
Thank you so much for joining us, David. Thanks for wishing to Things I Wish I Knew. I know this episode is going to change the way I think about my life and how I process things. I think this is one of those episodes that is going to stay with me for a long while. How about you? We'd love to hear about how David's story resonated with you. And why not also tell us if you're facing an experience you wish you knew how to look at differently? It might just be something we can help with. Write to me at jcorcoran@thinkingfaith.org and find out more about the themes we discussed today at thinkingfaith.org. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you'll join me again on next time on Things I Wish I Knew.